For all of his long life, journalist, politician, military strategist, Prime Minister Winston Churchill fought for England, for civilization, for himself, for his ideas. From fiasco to triumph, he had an utterly remarkable path to power. He experienced numerous fiascos that would have ended the careers of any other politician, and triumphs that even one of which would have assured his place in 20th century history. Conversant in poetry and literature, and writer of history and military analysis, Churchill's life was the grandest mix of fact and fiction.
The other day, President Roosevelt gave his opponent in the late presidential election a letter of introduction to me. And in it he wrote out a verse in his own handwriting from Longfellow. Sail on, O ship of state. Sail on, O Union, strong and great. Humanity, with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is hanging breathless on thy fate. What is the answer that I shall give in your name to this great man? Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
And finish the job they did in the Second World War. That's Winston Churchill speaking to the BBC on the February 9th of 1941. Well, historian and author William Manchester set out to publish a three-part biography of Winston Churchill. He wrote the first two in the 1980s, but he did not finish the job. He was unable to finish after two massive strokes. He died in 2004, and it was up to journalist and collaborator Paul Reed to finish his work. The result is The Last Lion, Winston Spencer Churchill, Defender of the Realm, 1940 to 1965. Paul joins us in the studio today. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Glad I have to say, here. Personally, I am so thrilled that you undertook this because I cannot tell you my sense of anticipation when I ended the second volume right before World War II begins. Just where's the third? I wanted it right then, and I realized it hadn't been written. And then when I heard that William Manchester died in 2004, I just felt as though something huge was lost. What was it like to pick this project up at this particular dramatic stage of the story?
Well, I had finished the second volume in 1988 or 9 or so and was with you and a lot of other people thinking, great, a few more years, there'll be a third volume. And then by the mid-90s, the most frequently asked question at Bill's publisher, Little Brown, was, where's the third volume? And by the late 90s, after the strokes, he knew then there was not going to be a third volume, that he wasn't going to write it. And we had become friends and chatted about it over the years. I knew him about 5 years. And he'd say, Paul, no one else can write it. It would be like a mother giving away her child for another to rear. I'd say, Bill, if she doesn't give the child away, they're both going to die. He'd say, nice try. Hmm. But he asked me to do it. He sent me home with some research materials and asked for a 60-page audition, if you will, on the Blitz. And it took me 3 or 4 months to write that. And he liked it, and his agent of 50 years, Don Congdon, liked it. Little Brown liked it. And the collaboration began and ended 4 or 5, 6 weeks later when Bill died.
What was it like to enter the voice of William Manchester and to enter the life of Winston Churchill simultaneously?
Well, I had read all of Bill's books, nonfiction, plus a couple of his novels. And pretty soon after beginning, my editor and I, Bill Phillips, realized that Bill Manchester was a great 20th century popular historian in the Stephen Ambrose, Cornelius Ryan vein. And even the professional historians 40 or 50 years ago, I'm thinking of Samuel Eliot Morison, the naval historian, you knew who they were rooting for. The Battle of Midway, when Morison writes about it, you know that he's for our flyboys. And my editor and I decided we just have to write this in a storytelling way. If that succeeds, that's what Bill Manchester did best, but not to try to imitate his style or narrative pace or, we didn't do a forensic reading of his books and think, okay, now we want that voice here and here and here. Now, Bill, and I think it worked in the second volume, especially Churchill loved his metaphors. I mean, Churchill wrote millions and millions of words, dictated them. His memoirs come to a million words, I think. And Bill successfully, you know, sort of, Bill's voice was almost a shadow of Churchill's. It worked. If he was writing a biography of Joe DiMaggio, it wouldn't have worked. But early on, we thought, just have to write this in my style.
Well, you certainly hear Churchill barking through this entire new volume that you've written here. You know, for much of the generation, I think, that's listening to us here, the character they know the best from Britain who retains that sense of absolute conviction is Margaret Thatcher. But Churchill takes it one or two orders of magnitude beyond Thatcher. What kind of a character on the global stage is Winston Churchill, and why is there no one like him today?
When I began, and especially when I ended, I believe now, as did Roy Jenkins, one of his biographers, a British parliamentarian, he was the greatest statesman of the 20th century. Pretty good painter, too. Great writer. Could play polo pretty well right up to his 50s. He was the man for all seasons, Renaissance man, classical man.
Had wine in the morning, loved to gamble.
And didn't gamble well. Wine in the morning and wine in the afternoon and champagne at lunch and brandy at dinner didn't seem to affect him. Eleanor Roosevelt dreaded Winston Churchill coming to the White House because he kept Franklin up all hours. And everyone was tired when Churchill left. Harry Hopkins usually went to the hospital. The president needed a vacation. And Churchill was off to his next adventure.
Why did he believe that Hitler was the monster that he was when the rest of Europe was willing to accommodate Germany?
Politically, I think he saw it in terms of the League of Nations failing, that there was no muscle to keep a resurgent Germany at bay. He thought the Versailles Treaty was just terrible. Treaty in the Augustinian sense of brutal and punished World War I era Germany too much, and he saw when they build up again, they're not coming in peace, and he saw that in the early 20s and 30s, early 30s, late 30s, and he read Mein Kampf and took Hitler at his word, and there it is in there that if the European Jews start a war, we're going to finish it, and we're going to finish them. And you know, and he made clear his designs on the Ukraine and a place to resettle good Aryan children. And so Churchill took him at his word, and as he started to nibble away at the Sudetenland and annexed Austria, I mean, here it was.
And he was right. Paul Reed is the co-author of The Last Lion, Winston Spencer Churchill, Defender of the Realm, 1940-1965, the third volume of William Manchester's extraordinary biography of Winston Churchill. What book had a meaningful impact on your life? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Paul, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.